This is the November 11 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. We're also joined by Dave Chatterton from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, Illinois. And Wayne Nelson is here from L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to the program anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. Let's get a short list of things we should talk about for the day. Dave Chatterton on your list.
Hey, thanks, Todd. I think today, you know, we want to talk about with harvest wrapping up and, you know, the spot season over, it's what do I do with grain in my bins? What am I going to do looking forward? Where should my targets be? And what's going to affect the market in that regard? With that, we're shifting away from the supply side argument. We're focusing on demand. So we're going to look at particularly at this bean demand from China and how it comes. The bean market is also focused on the South American crop development, which looks very favorable at the moment, and what that might mean for our export total. On corn, demand side looks good. Domestically, ethanol margins are very profitable. They look very strong. That's supportive. We expect our exports will pick up there. Also be focusing on the development in the South American crop. And, of course, we've had a fundamental change where in our part of the country we like to talk about row crops and corn and soybeans. Wheat is actually now the most bullish of the complex and kind of leading our markets and certainly being supportive of corn. So I think that's something, the acreage mix is in play next year. It's probably something we should discuss, but a lot coming up here towards the end of the year.
Kirk Kimmel, on your list of items?
Well, definitely the USDA crop report. Then also, too, there's a little bit of a correlation between the USDA crop report and the corn chart, then, of course, the technical picture in the commodities also.
And Dwayne Nelson.
I think it all rests on the export business. Will China reemerge? Will they come to us for some business? And for how long, with the way the crops are in South America, will it just be a much shorter time period? And, of course, that nasty word, inflation.
Well, let's start with where you started, which is what do producers do with that product, corn and soybeans, that they have put away in the bin at this point? And we'll deal, I think, with corn mostly. Whether or not they need to try to open that bin door up or to market it in some form.
Yeah, I mean, again, we'll separate that into two market sides. One in the cash basis market. I mean, certainly we've seen a strong rebound. We've got Decatur now posting 30 over openly for quick ship on corn. And certainly that corn is going to be in demand with the type of margins that we're looking at and the demand pull that we're looking at. From a future standpoint, we've seen a nice bounce back here off the fall low and the pre-crop report low. We're back up within range of actually touching the highs. And in doing so, the question is, are we overpriced? And I think when you look at what the USDA did, to Kurt's point on the report, not any big changes in corn. The numbers were mostly as expected. South American, you know, their second corn crop, or the safrinha corn crop, will be the important one. But we have a record new crop book of corn on with China that needs to ship after the first of the year. They've been very reluctant soybean buyers, as Wayne mentioned. But the question will be, are they going to take that corn? And so I think you have to have a reasonable target going forward. In looking at your corn, it's a situation where if basis is strong and the carry has more or less come out of the market, you need to be looking at those Jan and March numbers and picking a number that you feel is reasonable. If you want to have some upside ownership beyond that, hey, that's fine. For our part, for the corn that we do own after harvest, we have put coverage underneath that, almost all of that. Remaining crop, and it may be with put spreads, it may be outright out of the money puts, but you know, these are very profitable levels. There's not much of an excuse here not to have something underneath your corn at a level that's above $5 and very profitable on paper.
Dave said everything very well, but I'm going to go back to being the old grain elevator person here now. I think it's very, very, very important that you core your bins after harvest and done a little bit along the way. So don't lock them up until you core those bins. If you can core them at close to $6 cash, that's a wonderful idea. So we're advocating core your bins, get the good basis level now, get something out. Now, if you want to do some more and feel like doing it, I guess I'm along with his lies. If you want to re-own an option out there, you know, do some of that and lock in some good prices. We could go higher, or we don't have to go higher if the Chinese stay as far away from the corn market as they have the bean market.
Well, once a guy fills the bin, he's not going to empty it. Once he pays minimum storage, he's not going to turn around and sell. So a lot of stuff's locked in until year end on here. But as Dave hit there, man, this Decatur bid's hot. Guys sold some cash corn today at $6. You can go ahead and take that. you can do some covered replacement strategies. That way you got your money. If it does go up, you can participate. But, you know, we're kind of in a sideways higher trend in here for a while. But there's some opportunities out there, and I think you got to pounce on it, because when you look at the old crop price versus your old crop inputs, it's still a huge return for this past year.
The trend is your friend. What did the technicals tell you?
Well, basically, we're in a broad sideways trading range in through here. The technical-wise, if you do the retracements, man, they're hitting the retracements perfect here. If you look at the cycle, that corn's been doing a four-week cycle and through here. We did the low here this week right after the crop reports. But we're right back up the upper end of the range. We were here right before the report. So I think we're a broad-based sideways trading range in through here, and you got to take advantage of the ranges.
What's on your list of items that you talk to producers about when they call, other than coring their bins? How do you talk to them about corn and moving through, I don't know, the Jan, Feb, maybe March time frame?
Well, I think that basically they're just sitting back here, and I think like Kurt's saying is we're looking for the good basis levels to sell here, not necessarily flat price, because we can replace something if the price is down and the basis is good. I think that, you know, if we get a good price and a good basis, we don't have to replace it. But I mean, I think we're trying to look at going along the way more so with the idea of whether to get a good basis from the ethanol plant, from Cargill, where, you know, whoever around in your area is bidding up, we want to look and do. I do know that at the end of the week, I had a friend in Memphis. He said every one of the grain companies called him and said, how much do you have stored? How much do you have? And when can we try to buy it from you? So they are being aggressive on the river now, which they have not been for the last 2 months.
Well, I'm wondering about that. And you said, you know, once the bin doors are closed, farmers really aren't going to make that sale. And maybe on the same thing would go for the sale if it's put in the elevator and they pay the in charge. It'd be a lot easier to sell it out of the elevator than out of the bin, I would think. Do they need to think about that?
Well, if you can get your return on storage, then there's definitely something to look at. But a lot of this was sold way too early. Then plus, a lot of this was sold here this fall. And I've talked to elevator guys. They've got a record amount of January pay coming up here. So, you know, I think they're pretty well sold up. We've got inflationary fears just going nuts in through here. And so I think the tendency is if they don't get this stuff bought short term between now and year end in here, this market's going to have to move a little higher.
You shook your head. As I said, it would say it'd be a lot easier to sell out of the elevator than out of the bin. But, of course, I was thinking about it as the person who's not moving the grain and asking my farmer to do that. Maybe you have a different opinion.
Well, in general, Todd, if you go to your local elevator like that, that's not the area that's pushing the bid on the thing. We're talking about ethanol plants mostly in our area. Anyhow, there's going to be pushing the bid, and most of us didn't deliver to the ethanol plant. So you're not going to get that extra basis that we've been talking about just at your local elevator.
Yeah, I mean, good points from Wayne and you know, from Kurt. What I would tell you, too, Todd, is we've talked a lot about what's in the bin right now. I'm actually not as concerned about where we're at today in our old crop as I am looking at new crop. There's been a lot of discussion about fertilizer pricing and trying to calculate break-evens and where we're going to be in the spring as far as what we're going to do. But in the meantime, we've got some corn and soybean prices that are very profitable for 2022. And I think it makes sense to look at that. I don't think you want to get overextended on corn, particularly if you haven't locked up your inputs and you're not exactly sure where you're going to land. But if you have, you have the opportunity to look at some very profitable levels and get started on that first 15-20%. Soybeans, I think I'd be even more aggressive in looking above $12 and towards $12.50. You know, when we talk about China possibly not taking all the exports that we hope that they would, when we talk about the South American crop looking very, very good right now, Brazil's crop is projected at a record 144 million metric tons. It's very early, but they had raised a record crop last year at 137. They're looking at a 2.5 times projected increase in their corn exports for this year. So they're going to be a very stiff competition. Their bids right now starting in last half January and going into February, somewhere between 25 and 40 cents below what the U.S. offers are on soybeans. So we have a very short window here to make up for the exports that we've missed out on from the U.S. So once that South American crop becomes available, that soybean crop becomes available in last half January or early February, Our doors are basically closed, and we're concentrating on corn at that point. So don't let the old crop argument get in the way of making sure that you're looking at your new crop numbers as well.
On that note, Kurt Kimmel, looking forward to the new crop and the numbers that you might have. Producers probably are in two different boats, and it may be the same individual in two different boats. They may have booked some of their needs in the summer months for the inputs, and that would be a much lower price than what they might have had to pay for more recent fertilizer cost. Do they need to deal with them separately? And I'm really asking how much, if any, of their corn crop or soybean crop inputs should they cover at these levels for 2022?
Well, they're working on that, but man, it's just gotten out of hand right now. You know, and higher $1,200, $1,400. You know, that's just sky high. Fungicide, you just go down the line. Everybody's gone up, even on the equipment, fuel side. But even if you locked it in, some of these contracts are being torn up. They can't deliver. They're not going to honor them. And you know, that's several cases I've heard where they locked it in clear back last summer for this fall. So that's an issue, but just availability. I mean, guys are trying to buy train cars and stuff as a group to try to get the availability. So I don't know if somebody's just holding things up, making the price go higher here or not, but there's a lot of moving parts in here, and you got to kind of have a grasp on, and hires are 28% or just all these inputs. You just got to get a handle on where you're at and the availability of it.
Kurt said it all, availability. There, no prices are being made by anybody in our area for anything that you can't take now, and that is dependent on whether the supplier or the co-op can get it in or whoever you're buying from. They don't have availability. Roundup is not available. 2,4-D is not available, let alone some of the other things here right now. Potash, we're starting to hear some potash and DAP move into the Minnesota area and some train cars, but we're seeing very little. We've seen a little bit, one train come into our area, and it's already gone, and their bins are empty. And anything that you have to apply it now if you can buy it, and even at the extra prices. And there's nobody, and I mean nobody, at least in the 100-mile area that I've talked to in fertilizer, that it will even price you anything until they can get a hold of it. They might have bought it, but they're not sure they're getting it. It's just like Christmas toys. As we look at stuff here now, I mean, it's somewhere and whatever going on, but we do need to see this coming in. And I think if you can get at least 25% of your fertilizer put on this fall, if you can get it, even at the high prices, you should put it on, because availability is going to be a big deal. And this inflation level, we don't know where it's going to stop. If you stopped and think, today they announced it was like how many years, 31 years. That it's been since we've seen this much inflation in a month's time period, and it's really happening, and we're printing money really fast, and if we keep doing these trillion-dollar bills, we're going to print even more money, and inflation is not going to slow down.
And for those who are doing the math in their head, 1990 is the year. So 31 years, the fundamentals of usage at this point, the export market and ethanol, how are they holding up for corn?
Well, they've been doing really good. We did see a downturn this week, and we did see a gain in ethanol stocks this week. But even at the lower level this week compared to what it's been the last month, we are still on track to make the government's prediction of what we're going to use in corn to do it. So, I mean, if we can pick this back up, and we really feel that the ethanol business is going to stay strong and take off, and, you know, our ethanol plants, they're buying all the corn they can. They're processing as fast as they can because they're making money. It's just like processing beans. The crush is great. Let's do it now. I mean, you know, they can go down to a third of what they're making in ethanol now, and it's still profitable. So they're going to go as hard as they can. A wise old trader told me today, I said, well, should we buy gold for this inflation? He says, I'd buy ADM stock because of all the ethanol plants they've got going.
Well, they might be unhappy that they sold that Peoria plant. Then we'll see. We'll see, Wayne. But, you know, when you talk about it, demand side, I mean, when you talk about beans, you have basically crush and exports are it. And both of those are hitting on pretty good tones right now. The question the domestic crush is hitting on a good tone. The exports and soybeans running roughly 30% behind where we were our sales pace from a year ago. A lot of that comes back to China, and they've been very slow and very reluctant to pull up here. We thought that they would be aggressive buyers. They haven't been. Right now, the USDA, you know, we had the adjustment this month. I would expect that they're going to have to make further adjustments downward to those exports in the coming month, and it's going to take the carry out in soybeans higher. With that, we're going to see some price pressure going down as we do it. Corn, a little bit different story. As Wayne mentioned, you know, ethanol margins are pushing $1 a bushel right now. They are just phenomenal. Best that we've seen since 13-14, and certainly something that we can try and take advantage of. Exports are good, but there's a little bit of a question mark. They're good in the sense the sales are on the books, but we're at a point right now at the Gulf where we typically concentrate on soybeans, and we'll switch over to corn starting in, you know, late Jan and Feb. China has this huge amount of corn on the books. We think they're going to take it. They've started to talk about, there's been rumors this week that they're trying to buy corn from the Ukraine. Their feed grain situation doesn't lend itself to selling a lot out of their domestic reserves. So I think that they will probably take that corn. So it's kind of the situation where does the corn and the wheat perhaps float the soybeans, or do the soybeans become a drag on the feed grains?
The demand side, you know, it's fairly huge of corn, like Wayne said. Then there's a little concern on the bean side, as Dave said, about our usage in South America. But I think what the Trump card overrides is this human emotion. There's some inflationary fears out here. And when you look at the supply chain, I think there's going to be some hoarding take place. You know, I'm going to hang on. I need to book inventory and have some extra on hand. They don't want to be caught short. If you got an ethanol plant, you got to run corn through. If you got livestock, you got to feed it. You don't want to be caught short. But it goes back to the 70s. On the farm, their beans went to $9. I go, we're going to sell some $9 beans? No. I go, why not? We can't. What do you mean you can't? Well, we sold them. Well, what did you sell them for? $5. What did you sell them for $5 for? That was the highest price we've ever seen for beans. I don't know if we're in that stage yet, but for those guys that's been around for a while, I think that could be in the back of some minds.
Yeah, so are they going to get too bullish? Or the whole of the – is everybody just going to get simply too bullish?
Well, optimistic, let's put it that way. I mean, I don't wanna, no more than you get bullish, watch out. I mean, just like the chart there, you watch that market go up, okay, here we go. Next thing you know, we're back down to the lower end of the range in through there. I think there's some outside factors here we got to keep an eye on.
You know, Todd, will you say that we don't know how optimistic or pessimistic we should be because of the inflation factor. That is the thing that could make it go an extra $2 or make us stop here if we can get it under control.
So what's the Federal Reserve telling us about the inflation factor? Are they still out of the mind that this is a temporary blip, and do you believe it?
Ignore, deny is what I think the Fed is talking about. And they've changed their tone here a little bit of late, Todd, but it's been in a very soft way, at least in my opinion. Now, if you look at the latest CPI number that we had that we mentioned earlier, the highest in 30 or 31 years, and it's showing a 6.2% annual rate. It's stayed that way for the last 4 months, and it looks like it's actually increasing. But, you know, that's a government number. I'm not going to pick on their number, but I think if you look notionally at the price of gas, what you're paying at the supermarket, what you have to pay to go on a trip, you know, the price of corn, whatever factor you want to pick, how hard it is to buy equipment. I mean, I was telling Kurt earlier, we were looking at a water heater for our house. It's double the price that it was a year ago. Those are situations where in the real world inflation is much higher, I believe, than what the headline numbers are talking about. And to Kurt's point, I think, you know, I don't see any horns pulling out of his head right now, but they got to be just under the skin. But in that sense, I think there's it does change the mentality of the end user and the consumer to the point where, hey, how are we going to combat this? And it's something that you got to remember, we haven't had to have this discussion in almost over a decade. I mean, you can take yourself all the way back to 2008 if you want. So, you know, how the Fed is going to react to this, they don't have a lot of bullets in their gun other than raising rates, and we know how the Wall Street type has reacted to that. So it's kind of a good market, bad market. How deep do these outside investors want to come into the commodity space?
Yeah, but isn't this a supply chain issue and not an inflation issue?
Is that right? I mean, if you thought about it being a supply chain issue rather than an inflation issue, then it works the same as it does in the grain market, which is it will be overproduced and things will drop like a rock, potentially. I'm making the argument with you. I'm not making a stance on this, but I'm wondering whether it really is just a supply chain issue. And I'm also thinking that if it's a supply chain issue, that policy doesn't matter as much, but the companies are going to work really hard to fix it, and they've been working on it for a while.
Oh, for sure. And I mean, you know, the old saying, you know, high prices, best cure for high prices is high prices. But I think that takes some time. We're in a very different labor situation than I think we were pre-COVID, and trying to get those production levels back up. I think there's also been a fundamental change in China's stance, Todd, and I think started with fertilizer, and that's, you know, the discussion that we had earlier. But China has realized, I think their government, I should say, or the central party has realized that bringing in power from abroad, importing coal, let's say from Indonesia or Australia, subsidizing that power and putting it out to a fertilizer manufacturer, which is a very high pollutant industry, a very high energy intensive industry, for them to then subsidize that, you know, the cost of that fertilizer export for that company to make money, they're not going to do that anymore. And I think that's true of a lot of products. They're switching over from what has been a subsidized economy domestically to more of a domestic, you know, production model. And in doing so, they're changing the way. So those exports, I think, for some of these folks, including China, it's really changing our marketplace. We have seen a little tick down in the freight rates, you know, but not to the degree that they're anywhere close to where they were in 2019 or early 2020.
Supply chain and inflation.
Inflation is defined by too many dollars chasing too few goods. We have been printing too many dollars. The supply chain is not enough goods out there for everybody. So we've got two problems. We're printing too much money, and we're not getting the supply chain working again. I think if we get the supply chain working again, hopefully the feds will taper the amount of money we're printing.
Yeah, I'm just not too confident in the administration. You know, one idea is letting the dollar strengthen, so therefore we can buy cheaper products from overseas. Well, that's not the issue. I think it's a supply chain issue. The other thing is to lower or take off the Chinese tariffs so it makes it cheaper. We're not worried about cheaper. We're worried about getting the supply.
On the labor issue, I will make a comment here, and then we can move on. I want to talk about wheat with you just a little bit. I've been out several times in the last week. Twice I've heard at the restaurants that it was the first time they'd been full-staffed, but they were full-staffed, and there were two different places that were full staff. So I'm wondering whether the labor market is changing. One of the weather people I mentioned this to, it was Don Day, in fact, said, you must live in a different area than I do. things are rapidly advancing in different ways across the country. Wheat market has been leading. What does that mean to you?
Well, it's certainly a change, I think, in how we view the market. And wheat has certainly benefited corn to where it's at. And for years and years, or for the past 5, 6, 7 years, we've had a situation where, you know, the wheat stocks, both domestically and globally, have been very burdensome. You're talking about stocks-to-use ratios, 50%, 52%, 48%. We're now coming off of that. But I think more importantly, when you look at the exporter stocks in Russia, Ukraine, Europe, other parts of the world, you know, that India, they're typically exporters of wheat, they're very low. And they're seeing the same inflation that we are. So whether it's Russia seeing their food inflation get into double digits and saying, hey, our export tax right now is $70 a metric ton. If that's not enough, we'll take it to $100. You know, they're going to set that coming up here by the end of the month. So it's a situation where the wheat stocks globally are very tight. Where the pressure is on for, you know, a good production year, and we have some issues. Australia's too wet, quality concerns going on there. So there are a number of things going on, but at the end of the day, even though we're not in a big wheat country here, it's very beneficial to us from a feed grain standpoint. That wheat corn spread has been pushing up to a new high or against the old highs, and it's at a near record level. And I think that tells us something about the availability. You look at the oat market, you look at the barley market, you look at canola, you look at any of the oils that are going on, and a lot of these small crops that will fill in around the corn and in the feed supply are very tight, and it's going to make not only a very interesting basis and cash situation here, but also a very interesting planting mix come next year when you talk about the North Dakotas and the Minnesotas, the South Dakotas of the world, you know, does that producer plant barley as opposed to other feed grains, or a less, let me put it this way, a less nitrogen intensive crop other than corn?
Yeah, because those are spring crops, not fall planted crops in that part of the world.
Correct, yeah.
I do have another question about wheat as it's related to corn, and this is something that I asked Gary Schnitke earlier in this week based on some of the work he had been putting up on the Farm Doc Daily website, and that I was just thinking about, is related to wheat around the world being the primary feed grain. And over time, as he thought about it, he said, well, you know, that has changed some, even across the planet. And I'm wondering whether you think this is right, and that corn may be a feed grain across the planet more today than it was 10 years ago or 20 years ago, or certainly than it was 30 years ago, and that that might be very good for the export market to continue to grow for corn, even if other places across the planet are producing corn.
Well, it depends on the price ratios Dave hit on there, too, which one's the better buy, or with availability. Also, too, the quality. You know, good wheat turns into poor wheat. But, yeah, it's called the feed grain side of it. And to add something that David's talking about there, if you take the U.S. wheat stocks, we were pushing 900 million, a billion bushel. Now we're down to 550 million here, but not just the U.S., but Canada. But also, too, worldwide, the exportable wheat. Now, we got some good wheat stocks around, but exportable. Then plus, too, it's also called food security, as Russia's upping their export tax and so forth. So food security is a moving part in that equation, too.
No, I mean, I think I'd add, Todd, that, I mean, the USDA on their report, you know, here just this week was talking about a situation where global wheat trade, meaning i.e. exports, is going to be at a record level, the first time ever over 200 million. You've got feed grain trade over 400 million metric tons. So I think one feeds on the other and one substitutes for the other, and vice versa. It's a very interesting global mix. But I think instead of wheat being diminished, I think there are a lot of other the demand is growing at a rate that these other crops have had to come in and backfill against that wheat, and it creates opportunities for things like U.S. corn or Argentine corn, or, you know, barley out of the EU, or, you know, different things out, you know, spring crops out of the Ukraine. So it's a very interesting question. Yeah.
Well, it used to be the surplus wheat become feed wheat. At these prices, anything that grades well is food wheat. And that's what we're looking at. And it is needed around the world. It is at high demand, as you can look at the price. I mean, it isn't well over corn and that way, because it's not in demand. And we have a lot of places in the world now that are short of wheat. And they say that they are, you know, short of food they need to feed their people in a lot of countries right now. You know, one of the big lead stories yesterday was food banks are running out of money to buy food at these expenses, and food availability. And I think everybody, all the different world, is looking at that, and they want food security, as you said.
Let's get a final word now from each of you. And maybe you can make that targeted toward the soybean market simply because we didn't talk about it very much. I'd like to start with you, Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities.
Well, there's a lot of moving parts. On the soybean side, there's fears that we'll have more acres and less demand, so $12 would probably, new crop, we need to stay above that and do some sales above there. But I think the simplest thing to do, been doing for years and years and years, is put a price floor under there, put option strategy, then you're open on the cash side to market it down the road. Today is November 11th, this recording here, this is Veterans Day, and we thank you for your service.
Dave Chatterton?
Yeah, if we stick on the soybean topic for a minute, Todd, I think, you know, I'd echo what Kurt said. I think we have a much friendlier view of the feed grain side of the complex than we do the soybeans currently. You know, our viewpoint is that I think the carryout is going to have to increase over time here in the U.S. That's due to primarily to a loss of exports, to a bigger South American crop, and to the potential, at least, for more soybean acres coming forward. But at these types of prices, we've seen South America expand regularly at 5% every year, almost on the button from an acreage standpoint. I think that happens again in the coming year. So we could very easily be in a much different situation a year from now. So I think you want to be a little bit more aggressive in your soybeans, both old crop and new crop, than where you are in corn at this point.
And Dwayne Nelson.
I agree with Dave. I think that this next big bump in the beans that we hopefully can get because of the inflation bump, that we take advantage of and market a good share of our beans that we have in the bin.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online, listen to us on demand, the whole of the program, in fact, anytime you'd like at willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana, and Dave Chatterton from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, Illinois. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.